ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Chapter 2, text 63. Krodhad
bhavati
sammoha
sammoha
sammohat
sammohat
smriti vibhrama
smriti vibhrama
smriti bhramshad
smriti bhramshad
buddhinasho
buddhinasho
buddhinashat
buddhinashat
pranashyati
pranashyati
krodhad bhavati sammoha
krodhad bhavati sammoha
sammohat smriti vibhrama
sammohat smriti vibhrama
smriti bhramshad buddhinasho
Buddhinashat
pranashyati
Buddhinashat pranashyati
Krodhat
Krodhat
From anger
From anger
Bhavati
Bhavati
Takes place
Takes place
Sammoha
Sammoha
Perfect illusion
Perfect illusion
Sammohat
Sammohat
From illusion
From illusion
Smriti,
Smriti
of memory,
of memory.
Vibhrama,
Vibhrama,
bewilderment,
bewilderment.
Smriti Bramshat,
Smriti Bramshat,
after bewilderment of memory,
Buddhinasha,
Buddhinasha,
loss of intelligence,
Buddhinashat,
Buddhinashat,
and from loss of intelligence.
Pranashyati
falls down.
Falls down.
Translation. From anger, delusion arises, and from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost, and when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. Purport.
I seem to have the old edition.
I don't know if this is old or new. Or I think this is the Indian edition.
No, no. There's no Indian edition. This is the complete edition. This is the, this is the 1972 DVT edition. It's called the complete edition. Okay? Now there's the revised edition. Right?
Yeah.
Where they've corrected things that were in the original manuscript they added.
Yeah, because there's a verse here from Rupa Goswami that's
missing. Yeah, it's a pretty important verse.
Right.
And it's not in this one. I don't know why we get stuck with this edition. But I would request you to, if someone could give you the new edition, the revised edition that has that verse.
Okay. 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 Purport. Srila Rupa Goswami has given us this direction. Prapanchika taya buddhya hari sambandhi vastuna mumukshubhi parityago vairagyam falgu kataye Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1-2-258. By development of Krishna consciousness, one can know that everything has its use in the service of the Lord. Those who are without knowledge of Krishna consciousness artificially try to avoid material objects, and as a result, although they desire liberation from material bondage, they do not attain to the perfect stage of renunciation. Their so-called renunciation is called falgu, or less important. On the other hand, a person in Krishna consciousness who knows how to use everything in the service of the Lord. Therefore, he does not become a victim of material consciousness. For example, for an impersonalist, the Lord or the Absolute, being impersonal, cannot eat. Whereas an impersonalist tries to avoid good eatables, A devotee knows that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and that he eats all that is offered to him in devotion. So, after offering good eatables to the Lord, the devotee takes the remnants called prasadam. Thus everything becomes spiritualized and there is no danger of a fall down. The devotee takes prasadam in Krishna consciousness, whereas the non-devotee rejects it as material. The impersonalist, therefore, cannot enjoy life due to his artificial renunciation. And for this reason, a slight agitation of the mind pulls him down again into the pool of material existence. It is said that such a soul, even though rising up to the point of liberation, falls down again due to his not having support in devotional service. Different translation from anger, complete.
No, of the Rupa Goswami's verse.
Oh, because it.
Well, it's not in this. In 5.2.
5.2.
Yeah.
Okay. 5.2.
This verse is like the blueprint of Krishna consciousness movement.
Uh huh. Okay. When persons eager to achieve liberation renounce things related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thinking them to be material, their renunciation is called incomplete. Yes, here. Renunciation is complete when it is in the knowledge that everything is in existence belonging to the Lord, and that no one should claim proprietorship over anything. One should understand that. Factually, nothing belongs to anyone. When there is the question of, then where is the question of renunciation? One who knows that everything is Krishna's property is always situated in renunciation. Since everything belongs to Krishna, everything should be employed in the service of Krishna. The perfect form of action in Krishna consciousness is far better than any amount of artificial renunciation by a sannyasi of the Mayavadi school. So Arjuna has wanted to be renounced. He saw that he was, acting out of attachment, and he was thinking why he should be so attached. He is there fighting, and his fighting is then to basically please himself. He wants to kill Duryodhana and his brothers, establish righteousness, do all these things. Then he sees that it's not such a good proposal. It's quite selfish. And even more selfish is the other side, Duryodhana and his brothers. So then he is thinking, therefore, I will renounce all this. And then we see that then Krishna is giving these points that this kind of renunciation is not so important. Because it's not actually renunciation, it's not his to renounce. It doesn't belong to him in the first place. That is the difficulty. He is thinking it's his, his thing. He can fight, not fight, it's up to him. And the results are up to him. If he fights, he'll win. And if he doesn't fight, then the other side will take everything. But Krishna is pointing out here that the most important thing is seeing something in relationship to the Lord, when it's connected to the Lord. That's real renunciation. We see in the 18th chapter, then Krishna describes renunciation, and he describes sannyas. So renunciation is you get a result, then you give that result up. So generally, we see that one may perform an activity with the idea that one will get a result. Then after getting this result, then one feels that, it is good. It is a pious thing, or it is a very, elevated thing. Then to give it away. And then people think, oh, very renounced, this person. So that's good, it's renounced. But at the same time, as then Krishna points out, sannyas is actually a higher principle. Because sannyas means you don't do the work that is going to create a result. So you give up the work that creates the result. See, one person does the work, to get the result, then gives up the result. Another person doesn't do the work, therefore there is no result because there's no work. So that is sannyas. But now Prabhupada then takes it a step further here under Rupa Goswami's direction. That what is this not doing work? See, the one person is thinking, I am the cause of the work and the result is mine. Then I give it up. I am pious, I am giving it in charity. So this is what Krishna has already described previously as capricious work. It is not according to Shastra. It's not authorized by Shastra. One may think it's authorized, but it's not. Shastra is saying, you must do your duty, but the results, they don't belong to us. The ability is coming from Krishna, the work is coming from Krishna, the ingredients are Krishna, the result is Krishna's. It means if Krishna is the cause, then the result belongs to him. So then, therefore then, this idea that I am going to renounce things doesn't actually exist, because it's not ours to renounce in the first place. It belongs to Krishna. He's the cause of it. We desired it, and because we think we're the one that's doing it, therefore, then yes, the result comes to us. Everyone will say, yes, your result. But it's not actually. Then, the other side, then when Arjuna said, well, therefore, I won't work. I won't perform this battle. I won't be engaged in the battle. And because of that, then there'll be no result. The result will go to Arjuna. So actually he's thinking, by my not doing, the result will be that they will get. I'm giving it to them. Another aspect you could say, oh, he's very renounced. He's not doing the activity that will create a result. So therefore he's very renounced. But then Rupa Goswami points out that that is phogu. It is not real, not real important. Because actually, it's not our work anyway. And the result's not ours. So when we engage that in the Lord's service, that's the actually not getting result. So this is what is ununderstandable to the karmis, the jnanis, and the yogis. Because they are result-oriented for their own results, their own purposes. They will get a material result. They will get away from material result, or they will get mystic siddhi, they will merge into the Lord. By their work, I will merge into the Lord. By my work, I will merge into the Brahman. By my work, I'll get siddhi, I will get enjoyment. So, like this, it is they cannot understand this, that you're going to do the activity that will give seemingly material result, right? But since you're not doing it for yourself, you're doing it for Krishna, it doesn't give a material result. So there's nothing to give away. It's already given away before you start. It's already Krishna's. So this is the actual platform of sannyas. So we can see it applies here. Someone may ask, he's not a sannyasi, he's a grihastha. The Prabhupada points out so many times that the real sannyasi is one who is working for Krishna. So it doesn't matter which varna or ashram they are following. If they are doing the activity to please Krishna, that actually is sannyas. The other sannyas order is basically an aspect of creating, you know, social improvement, social movement forward, creates proper, how do you say, you know, the proper dynamics within the system. It also shows renunciation as a higher principle. But the first step in renunciation is that it's mine, I give it away. But the next step is that I don't do the work to get the result, so there's nothing to give away. But the real thing is I do the work, but the result's Krishna's. So it's already given to Krishna before starting. See, renunciation means I do the work, it's mine, and after I give it away. Then there's a person who does nothing and gets no result. But what is the use of this? The living entity is active. There will be activity. There will be result. So the Krishna conscious principle is before I start the work, I've given it away. It's not mine. And so then I'm working for someone else. Renunciation means I'm working for myself. Then sannyas means I'm working for Krishna. Because it's Krishna's work. So therefore, it doesn't matter what the aspect is. It means it doesn't matter what is the position, what one's social position is. What matters is the consciousness. that unattached obligatory work, that is sannyas. And that can be followed by anyone. That is what is so unique about the Krishna conscious system, the Vaishnav system, because it actually deals on a different platform than what the materialists are used to. Materialists are used to cause and effect, or karma. But the devotees act without karma, because they're acting on the transcendental platform. So what we see is, therefore, only the devotees can be successful. Krishna's talk now about that one has to conquer the senses, and that is an actually intelligent person. He gives the example of the tortoise, and so many different ways he introduces this point. So now this is being shown. Rupa Goswami is giving this essence here, that this is how it's done. Right? Technically, in this verse, the previous verse, we see is that the process of how the mind is working and the attachments and the intelligence and all this is working. But that's what's going on. Okay, but now how do we go beyond that? How do we practically apply the point that Krishna is making, that we must be detached from this material world and focused on Him? So that's it. By doing the work for Krishna, by detached work that's done for Krishna's satisfaction, that is what will get the steadiness of mind, the focus of mind, and will avoid this whole process of contemplation, attachment, anger, delusion, and then loss of memory, intelligence, bewilderment, then falling down. So this is the practical application of this. So then he gives the example, is the others, then they don't have an alternative. And Karmi is not worshipping the Lord, Jnani is not worshipping the Lord, Yogi doesn't worship the Lord through worship, Vipassana, he does through meditation. So he only comes in contact with the Lord at the end, when he starts dharana, actually when he starts samadhi. Dharana means to focus the mind. He pulls the senses in mechanically, then when the senses are pulled in, then he starts to focus them in one place. Example is given of pouring honey. When you pour honey, you see it comes out very wide, and then as soon as it's left the mouth of whatever you're pouring from, it becomes very super, super thin and stays like that. So dharana means that you take the mind from wherever it is and then focus it on one point. When it's focused on one point, then you're supposed to put the paramatma there. So that's samadhi. That's dhyana. But that's at the end. That's already at the Uttama stage. So that means through their Kanista and Madhyam stage, there was no worship of Krishna, no thought of Krishna, no service to Krishna. So the Karmis, Jnanis, and Yogis technically cannot control their senses. They may to some degree. The Prabhupada gives example in previous verses of great, great yogis and mystics. They're falling down because there's no way to engage the senses properly. You know, really, it means by the process of dharma, this piety, the senses are engaged to some degree, and they're purified. But the attachment to the senses, that is not removed. What is removed simply is attachment to sinful ways of pleasing the senses. That is done. So from that stage, if we're attached to the pious, then it's generally easier to go, the next stage is then, it's already in goodness, let's go to pure goodness. While if we're attached to passion and ignorance, it's more difficult to get to there. So therefore it's beneficial. Unfortunately, because it's pleasant and nice, sometimes it's very difficult. Like you see, people from very disturbed backgrounds many times easily take up Krishna consciousness. And those from very wonderful, pious, nice families never become devotees. You know, it's so nice. What's the problem? There's no problem in this world. I do my duty, everything's so nice, so wonderful. And they're not devotees. Right? We don't hear of any stories of devotees. Everything's just so wonderful and perfect, and every day they wake up and it's another perfect, wonderful day, and everything went perfect today and throughout the day, and then tomorrow is another wonderful, perfect day. And like this, then you have thousands of verses describing how it was such a nice, wonderful, and perfect day. And no. Right? Already we've heard this for 30 seconds, we're bored. Right? We hear the Pandavas, you know, all the problems, lose their kingdoms, thrown out, father dies, mother dies, banished to the forest, you know, all this thing. That's what we hear. Then we go, oh, yes, that's some, okay, some action, something happening. Right? So the other is nice, but the thing is then it's so nice you get caught up in that, and then the same thing, but in a pleasant way. The delusion arises, you forget the material world is a difficult place, and then the intelligence is lost, we fall down. Many times you see, you know, is that devotees go along, it's very nice, but they're not becoming introspective. They're not trying to contemplating, you know, what's going on. So then they become attached to the nice position that they have gotten. When Lakshmi is there, when Narayan is there, Lakshmi is there, they have a nice position, it's going on, wonderful life, they become attached, they don't think about it, and then they tend to just kind of like fade a little bit away from Krishna. And then Krishna has to wake them up. Right? Generally the wake up is not necessarily so pleasant. You know, it's not breakfast in bed or something. It's something not so pleasant. Then we wake up. So there's the subtle aspect of this, there's the gross aspect of this. So the impersonalists, all that, because the Lord has no form, or the karmis are not interested in the Lord at all. So where's the offering to the Lord? And if even they're making an offering, it's generally not to the Supreme Lord, it's to the various devas, to the forefathers, you know, to the Brahmins, like this. So it's pious, but where is the prasad? Where will the prasad get them? Right? Remnants from the demigods will get them to the demigods. Forefathers will get them to the forefathers. Right? They're offering their, you know, all these different things, so it won't get them. So where will, how will the senses be controlled? Because the bottom line is, they want to enjoy. And the yogis, they're doing so many nice asana and pranayam and all these different things, but there is no offering to the Lord. Right? So there's nothing to control the senses. So only the devotee, he can engage the senses in the Lord's service. Like that. He knows that all these activities are to be done to please Krishna. And then he's introspective. How to do it? Am I doing it? What is the quality that I'm doing it? Am I engaging my senses nicely? Am I cooking for Krishna or am I cooking for myself? Right? I cook for myself, I want to cook nice, eat nice. I cook for Krishna, I want to cook nice also. Both ways, the result will be some nice, something nice to eat. But the one will have superior consciousness because I've done it to please Krishna. And then I'm the most satisfied. Then the senses are controlled. Otherwise, if it's for me, I like this, I like that, then more difficult. Because then it's, I'm doing the activity, I get the result, I give it to Krishna. Then it's renunciation. I offer it to Krishna. Then I take the remnants. But sannyas is higher. I cook it for Krishna. Like that. Whatever I have, you know, whatever by my means, this is what I have. So I offer this, it's Krishna's. And then I take the remnants there. So like this, in every aspect of our life, whatever we're doing, we see how to do that. Is Krishna pleased by it? Am I engaging the senses how Krishna would like it? Then the senses are completely controlled. Then one doesn't fall down. That is the point made here. Prabhupada says, so after offering good eatables to the Lord, the devotee takes lemons. Okay. Thus everything becomes spiritualized and there is no danger of a fall down. So we have to spiritualize everything that we do in connection with Krishna. All the aspects of the senses, whatever we want to do, do it for Krishna. We become spiritualized, we become purified, we become elevated. Whatever the position. This is the wonderful thing about the Vaishnava Dharma, is that in the beginning we will see the whole step through the whole Varnashram system and all these different things. But ultimately, that's not important. What's important is whether you're doing it for yourself, whether you're renouncing, or whether it's actually sannyas, means doing it for Krishna. This is the position. So from any position, therefore, one can go back to Godhead. Any questions on this? Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Hare Krishna. Prabhupada said that unless Jnanis and Yogis take up devotional service, then only they can go back to Godhead.
Yes.
Even the yogi can achieve Paramatma Dhyana Jishma. Unless he takes up devotional service, then he can go back home back to Godhead.
Yeah, when the yogi sees the Paramatma, then he has two choices, is to take up devotional service and then start bhakti from that point, or to merge into the Lord. But up to that point, there's been no devotion. Even though he's meditated on the Lord, but the Paramatma is not a full manifestation of Bhagavan. You have Sat and Chit. It's eternal, and you have knowledge about the Lord, what he looks like in this, but they don't know what he does, so it's not complete. So his pastimes or ananda is not there. So you can't get back to Godhead on only those two. The spiritual world means Sat, Chit, Ananda. So they can get only up to the Paramatma. We see this, the Yadus. They are Paramatma realized. They see Krishna as Paramatma. And therefore, after their party at Prabhashetra, where they took up all the reeds and started killing each other, they all went back to the heavenly planets. They didn't go back to Godhead. Right? Because they only knew Paramatma. And for them, Shirodakshay Vishnu, that's who the demigods worship. When they have a problem, they go to him. Right? That's how the whole Leela started. Bhumi Devi came, went to Brahma, then they went with the demigods to the milk ocean. They prayed to Krishna. Krishna came and said, I will come. You first take birth on the earth. Then I will come. So he came. And then he finished his pastime. Then they all had this war because they're the demigods. Who's going to kill them on this planet? And then they went back to the heavenly planets to continue their worship of the Lord as Paramatma. So then Bhagavan realization, that's what gets you back to Godhead. So that's why unless the impersonalists like we see the four Kumaras or Sukadev Goswami take up bhakti, then they go to that platform. Or the yogis, they see the Lord in the heart, then surrender to Him, then take up devotional service. We see that with some of the Prajapatis. In the beginning, they did their meditation for 60,000 years, saw the Super Soul, then took His blessings for family life and that, and then did it as devotees. So they took up devotional service. So it's devotional service. There is no other process. Other processes are given to keep the materialists out of trouble. Right? If they're busy doing yogasans, or they're busy studying the shastras, or busy doing yajnas, they don't bother anybody. Right? The demons aren't interested in this. They want a quick way, the staircase to the heavens, or like this. So they make trouble. The demigods don't make trouble like that, or at least minimal trouble like that. So it keeps them busy. Is that what you were getting at?
When Krishna speaks about the movement of memory, is he meaning the forgetfulness of the spiritual identification with man?
Basically, some aspect means, because you can, this applies at all levels. Whether you're situated in ignorance, passion, or goodness, this will function. But you forget what is the proper situation. See, the memory is an interesting thing that's used both by the, it's part of the intelligence, but it's accessible by the mind. So the memory is basically a link between between the mind and the intelligence. So for the mind to choose, it checks memory to see if it's something that is wanted or not. What happened in the past? When I had this sensation on the end of my finger, what happened in the past? And it goes into the memory. Then the memory says, well, you ended up with a blister on the end of your finger that hurt for many days because this, what you've stuck your finger into is called fire. And then the mind goes, okay, I reject this situation that the finger is in, and you pull your finger back from the fire. So this is all going on. Very quick, but this is the process that's happening. So intelligence is is important. So here, attachment, the attachment, the anger, then, and this delusion, these are all aspects of the mind. And then, so then that then pollutes the memory, and then the intelligence can't also function because it needs memory to logically discriminate. Is it, you know, between, just logically discriminate, not whether I'll do it or not, but just it goes through. What is the logistics of it? What's the results of it? It goes through all that in an unattached way. But so when the memory is lost, then or bewildered, then the intelligence can't function. And when the intelligence doesn't work, then just one will fall into material difficulty. Is that okay?
Usually we hear that the yogis are after mystic powers. And usually we also hear that they are higher than jnanis. I'm interested why it is so often emphasized the yogis are after mystic powers. And how are then they higher than jnanis who are after liberation?
See, the yogic system is not actually for gaining mystic powers. They just come as a side thing. It's just like you honor Prashad for the purpose of respecting the Lord. You get full, you know, as you eat. Your hunger is satiated. But that's not the main reason. It's a matter of honoring the Prashad, saying Amrita Pau, to honor the Prashad. That comes on the side. So some, then they become bewildered or attracted by these side things and go into those. Because the whole point is karmis, jnanis, and yogis are under the control of Maya. So if Maya can get you on a lower level, then why not? Why should you wait for a higher level? And if you can be distracted at a lower level, then there's no need to go through the whole endeavor because the higher level is more difficult. Right? Because the higher you go, the more qualified in this. So it's easier. If they can just get them by interest in mystic city, then they've done. So then the other aspect, why the yogis are considered higher than jnanis. Jnanis don't work. So therefore, there is no system to purify themselves. Basically, if you want to run it properly, then you have to have been a good karmi to have purified yourself by the work is called, you know, naishkarmya, or performing your activities, you know, in knowledge, in detachment, and that will purify you. Then when you're purified and see the futility of the, you know, karmic pleasures, the heavenly pleasures, then you take up the process of jnana. But it's based on, without karma, jnana won't work, because jnana cannot purify you. You have knowledge, but until you apply knowledge, you don't get a result. Like, let's say I know so much knowledge, let's say, about music, but unless I sing, there is no music. Right? So the jnana actually doesn't give a result. It's a theory, but it doesn't purify. While yoga, it has 8 stages. Right? The first 6, that's a, what is it, yoga root? Yoga Ruruksu. That is Naishkarmya. Is they're performing activity. They're doing asana, yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana. Those 6, those are karma, but they're done in a detached way, in proper knowledge, according to Shastra. So it's Naishkarmya. So it purifies them. Then they're able to take up dhyana on the super soul. So the process of dhyana is higher. Because what do the jnanis have nothing to meditate upon? It's only knowledge. So knowledge can take you to liberation, but meditation is beyond liberation. That gets you in touch with the Lord, right? Means the state beyond Brahma Bhuta is contact with the Lord, so that the yogis can get to. They can get in contact with the Lord. They can see the Lord. They can personally see Him. But the stage beyond that is called prema. That they don't have. That's only attained by bhakti. That's why the bhakti yogi is higher, because his process takes you higher. So the yogic process, its main working thing at the end, jhana, is a higher principle than karma, jnana, which is knowledge, which ends at liberation. Meditation is beyond liberation, right? But before prema. So it's a superior system. Plus, it includes the aspect of karma, so it can purify. Right? So basically, it has karma jnana in it. But then it takes it a step forward. You have the jnana and samadhi, which we see in the sixth chapter is the aspect that the devotees take. Right? It means karma, we take activities that are authorized by Krishna to be done for Krishna's satisfaction. From jnana, we take the process of knowledge that how the material world works so we don't become entangled in it. And we do that work for Krishna. And then jnana, that's why his sixth chapter is called Jnana Yoga. He mentions the Astanga, but that's not what he's talking about. That's the whole thing. We're only taking from it jnana and samadhi, which means we are thinking of Krishna, absorbed in Krishna. So we see the bhakti process includes karma, jnana, and yoga, but only those elements that are connected to Krishna. And the material elements for going to the heavenly planets, the Brahman, or merging in the super soul, that we drop. Does that make sense?
I think 12th chapter Krishna describes that the higher than dhyana is karma pala dhyana. Higher than dhyana,
Yes.
How is that?
Because there, that's not karma phala tyag, because that's already been done on the lower levels of yoga. This is in bhakti. That's with the 12th chapter. See, the middle six chapters are talking about devotional service. You know, who is that absolute? Right? He's all the way through saying you should meditate upon the absolute, the Lord, this, that, through the first six chapters. Seventh chapter, he starts describing who is that absolute. What are his powers? What are his opulences? Then in the 12th chapter, then, you know, it's him. You know, the devotional service is the thing. So that karma phala tyaga is not just you've given it up in the way of renunciation. You've given it up in the way of sannyas, is for Krishna. Right? So you've gone beyond actually the material aspects of karma and jnana. You perform the activity, but for Krishna. That's bhakti. Right? So it looks, in one sense, the same as what the karmis are doing or the jnanis are doing, or the yogis are doing. But it's not. It's beyond that because it's bhakti. That's the subtle point. Is that there's Prabhupada mentions is that the process that the jnanis follow and the understanding of the material world is useless, we follow the same. The difference is they take the Brahman as the goal and we just take it as a doorway we go through on the way to bhakti. So it's for us it's not a goal. Getting out of the material world for us is not a goal. It's just part of the process, right? We want to get to prema. To get there, part of it means we have to give up our attachments to the material world, because when we're thinking of the material world, we're not thinking of Krishna. So for us, liberation is not a goal. And sometimes the devotee thinks, I want to get out of here, this is terrible, this and that. It's nice, because he wants to get out of here, and then the next thought is Krishna, right? So it's not actually proper, it's a mixed devotion. The proper thing is, I want to remember Krishna. Whether I'm in the material world or not, it doesn't matter. Right? Remembering Krishna is the thing. Right? But we should be qualified to go back to Godhead. But whether Krishna wants to take us, that's up to him. We shouldn't, you know, want to be here. No, the material world is distracting our attention, therefore we're not remembering Krishna. So we follow the regulative, you know, regulative principles of freedom. Right, it's the next verse. And by that, then we are freed from the material world. So we're following regular principles of freedom as someone performing naishkarmi would do, which they could do in karma, they could do in jnana or in yoga, if they're enlightened, if they know. Right? But we don't do it like they do it, because they're doing it on the platform of material sannyas. The devotee is doing it on the platform of bhakti. Therefore, all devotees who are, you know, in that mood, they're all sannyas.
while the others are doing it in that order, basically. They take up the order of sannyas to do it. But the devotee can access that same renunciation from whatever position they're in. So it's a superior system. You see, it goes beyond. That's why it goes beyond the rules. Rules are followed, but it's beyond the rules. Because its goals are different. Its goals are beyond the rules. Its consciousness is beyond the rules. So it's in a different category. Does that make any sense?
Thank you.
I'm just going to say, I think the central aspect, as you said in the passage, is that the yogi tends to, or he should, meditates on the super soul, which is a higher aspect of Krishna than what the jnani meditates
on. Yeah, that's also a very good point.
So therefore, he's more in touch with the personal understanding, so he's higher, ultimately.
Yeah, that's a good point. Though Prabhupada also then takes that also a step further, saying, but it's a higher because they're going, instead of just sat, in personalist no sat only, so there's no form. Chit, there's a form, but no relationship. But then he says, and also they're more unfortunate because the impersonalists don't know that there's a form and they're merging into Brahman, while the yogis know that there's a form and it's so beautiful and it's the most wonderful, and then they merge into it. So they're actually more unfortunate in that way if they get to that level. But the process is a higher process, definitely, by what he said there, because you're taking it, there's two aspects of Godhead instead of one, so it's more complete. That's a very good point.
The other thing was confusing that very often it is used that yogis are after mystic powers.
No, because that's generally what they're into. Most are into that.
Maharaj, in the Bhagavatam 11.6.31, the Yadu dynasty retires to Prabhas. It seems that they're quoting Srila Jiva Goswami, who says that the members of the Yadu dynasty are eternal servants of the Lord. And Srila Jiva Goswami is saying that the members of the Yadu dynasty are eternal associates of the Lord. There's no question of their destruction. So I'm a bit baffled by what you say.
Well, you have both aspects are there. See, because the demigods are also eternal associates of the Lord, because those positions are always the servants of the Lord. You may have different souls in those positions, but their positions, the potency, is coming from the Lord and the Lord's eternal associates. Actually, the associates that are of the Lord in Raja Vrindavan, they expand, those potencies expand out into Dwarka, out into Vaikuntha, then into the heavenly planets on down. So all the potencies that are there in the spiritual realm are found here. And then those positions, devotees are taken. So in one sense, then those positions, then they're devotees like that. At the same time, is you also are having the eternal associates come with them. So both are happening. So it depends on... The main principle is that we're seeing, how you say, depending upon this situation, then they're taking one angle. Like here, because Arjuna wants to renounce things. Therefore, then, we're talking about how engaging the senses in the Lord's service is the higher thing. Right? So those examples are given here, because he wants to renounce. So the purpose is to get him to understand. While you could take a whole other half of this, you know, that. Is that so? It's
a different angle.
Different angle. Yeah, that's the thing. The purpose of what's called vichar is to study the philosophy and from different angles. That's why sometimes we call it contradiction, but it's not a contradiction. So it's just a matter of we get more and more angles. So when we see that this is there, and Prabhupada says this, and he says that, that means they're both right. So there must be something common between them. And when you find that, then you start to really understand. You know? Like that.
Arjuna finds devotion for Krishna
Karishya Bhajananda. That's the highest platform of sannyas, and he's fighting.
Yeah.
Perfect devotee, for instance. Then, what's the meaning behind the lila later when he seems to have to learn another lesson? When you mentioned last time that he couldn't fight the cowherd man, and that seemed to take him to a higher level of understanding something higher, and then ultimately they give up and they go to the Himalayas. So, what's the idea behind that? And sort of like, even that he's perfect, he's on the highest level fighting, but then it seems to go that there's something higher.
You also have many aspects, you know, because it's these. If it was so simple that you could just stick it in little boxes with little arrows between it, you know, people would have figured out the material world long ago and gotten bored. But it's very complex. So we see that where Prabhupada mentions about how, you know, his power was taken away, then he says that Arjuna didn't require this anymore. He was empowered with that. But as the Lord's eternal servant, now it's time to move on. So he didn't require it anymore here. So you have the aspect is that we perform devotional service according to our position, you know, as conditioned according to our acquired modes. But then as one goes on, then one goes beyond the modes. But then it's one's spiritual nature. And then what is one's relationship with the Lord? So in the conditioned state, we serve the Lord through our conditioned nature. So we can't change that conditioned nature. It's whatever we have. We just use it. Then there's the actual original acquired nature, according to the original nature of the soul. And so, but the principle is the same, right? Rasa is the same. It's not a difference in rasa. Material rasa, spiritual rasa, the principle is the same. But why is the one is pure and one's perverted is in the pure rasa, Krishna is the enjoyer. In the perverted rasa, we're the enjoyer. Right? But otherwise, you see it's the same principles, you know, man and woman, or parent and child, or friend and friend, or master and servant. It's the same basic principles. So then, therefore you'll see is that the devotees, according to the situation that's there, means he has, the Lord is going to destroy all the demons. And he comes to perform his pastime. Therefore, Arjuna is empowered to do that according to his position. That's his nature, is to do that. Then, when it's no longer required, that's removed. It may stay, it may be removed. Like that. We don't see it was removed with Yudhishthira or Bhima. But Arjuna, it was.
The nature.
Means that empowerment to defeat everybody. Because in the human form, he defeated the demigods, Shiva. You know, no one defeats Shiva. You know, he's in another category. But he was able to because Krishna was there. Right? We see Krishna was always with him. So that's removed because it's not necessary anymore. That part of the pastime is finished. And then from that, then they all leave for the forest and then they also go. So then the Yadus, and they get drunk and they kill each other. You know, and the Pandavas leave for the forest, like this. And anyway, they wind up so that they go to where the Lord is in the next place where the Lila is going on. So you'll see a similarity even between the liberated souls, how they'll act, you know, like that. Like Uddhava, he'll be the minister and he'll do so many things. And he has a male form and he'll wear a dhoti. And so it looks like what's going on here. But there it's not, the acquired nature is not because of our material desires, because of their spiritual desires. So there's verse that's Yam Kama Krodha Sahaja Pranayana Bhiti Vatsalya Moha Guru Gaura Vasaya Bhava. That aspect is told in Brahma Samhita. By their particular affection for Krishna, then they get a particular form with attributes and particular nature and everything like that. While in the material world, because of our attachment to the material world, therefore we have a particular, you know, form and attributes and all that. So the principle is you engage that in Krishna's service. But they're dealing with the superior because of their affection for Krishna. And we're dealing with the inferior because of our attachment to the material world. But this is a reflection of that. Therefore, the same principles are used. Right? But we must work through Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra because we don't know how to engage that. We don't know how the spiritual people
engage their nature in Krishna's service. So we have to be taught by Guru Sadhu and Shastra. Does that make any sense? I think yes.
They have explained sannyas in three aspects. In the first one, somebody works and gives up the result of the work. In the second, he doesn't work and there is no result. And the third one, a devotee who works, he works totally for Krishna. That is absolutely. So, and now the question comes, Arjuna is fighting on behalf of his elder brother, the dispute of Krishna. So, now the question is he doesn't want to fight. He wants to fight actually. He doesn't want to fight me, so he wants to do that. So how are we going to explain?
Means why is giving it up?
He doesn't want to fight, and actually that's not his fight. Actually he's fighting on behalf of Yudhishthira. So he's not interested to fight actually. So how we can explain,
he's giving up. Because the brothers are there, and so they follow the authority of the elder brother. And so they all want to see, they have their part in wanting to remove Duryodhana. So he has his particular, angle on things. Means he wants to, correct Karna and Duryodhana and all these others. Because of, all the bad things they've done. As kings, Dharma must be followed. And Duryodhana and his associates aren't properly following. Therefore, they should not be the kings. Because if they're not following Dharma, how are they going to establish Dharma in the kingdom? Therefore, it's doing. And they're individuals, they're people. So within serving, working for Yudhishthira, then he has what he wants to do. Problem is he's thinking he's the doer. So therefore, since he's the doer, then he can also give it up. But Krishna is pointing out to him, no, you have to do your duty for Krishna. That's actual renunciation. Because he's a grihastha, he's not a sannyasi, so he's not going to go to the forest. Because if he does it, they're not going to say, oh, yes, he's such a great sadhu, he's going to the forest. They'll all just say he's a useless kshatriya. So Dharma will be established. The great Pandavas will be seen in a bad light. The citizens then will, then give up their proper respect for the line of, the Kshatriya kings. Because you lose if you have somebody you respect and you lose that faith, you generally lose faith in all. Right? It takes someone who's more mature and trained to be able to distinguish that this one person maybe has a problem, but the other is okay. The principle is okay, this one person has a problem. But the general populace has a tendency is when something goes wrong in one place, then the principle's bad, right? Kings are bad, right? Kings are fine if they're God-conscious. If there's no God-conscious kings, okay, that's another thing. But the principle of kings, monarchy, there's no problem. But nowadays, it'll be thought, no, monarchy is bad. Right? Because, some kings in their experience weren't good, so therefore all kings are bad. So that's the common person will think like that. So they can't allow that. So the king, if he is infamous, then it ruins the whole system of Dharma. So they have to do properly. They have to establish Dharma. So even he's working for Arjuna, for Yudhishthira. That means this would be the principle of why they would perform the fight. He can't walk out on it. That's why Krishna gives that as a reason why he, should go back on the battlefield. A lower reason. Then he takes it to the next stage, is why you should do your duty in an attached way. You should do it in a detached way. Right? Then he'll take him from here, then into explaining fully the process of karma, karma yoga, then the process of jnana yoga, then the process of jnana yoga. Then when that's all established, then he'll take it into bhakti. Though the whole thing's bhakti, but he's just emphasizing the aspects of it. Well, bhakti is actually the whole mood, why you do it, your consciousness, how you do it. Okay? Let's probably end here.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Sanavita Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitya Gaura Prema ki.